TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Professor Don Huber, an insider's warning on the impact of GMOs and the herbicide Roundup on crops, animals, people, and the environment.
That was the headline for TUC Radio's first broadcast with Professor Don Huber. It went out in October 2012. I'm presenting it again in June 2019 because the public perception of genetic engineering and Monsanto's herbicide Roundup is changing. In May, a jury in Oakland, California, ordered Monsanto to pay a husband and wife more than $2 billion in damages after finding that its Roundup weed killer caused their cancer. Why did it take so long to acknowledge the risks of Roundup? So much was known already in 2012. And now back to my introduction with the data as they were known then.
The battle lines are drawn over safety of GMOs, genetically modified or engineered plants and animals, between the corporations that make them and farmers and consumers expected to handle and eat them. In only 15 years, GMO corporations such as Monsanto and DuPont managed to replace over 80% of the corn and soy grown in the U.S. by their expensive patented BT corn and BT soy and Roundup-ready corn and soy. Upward from 80% of all products in our grocery stores already contain GMOs as ingredients, as sugars or starches, etc., even though there have been no studies made on their impact on human health. At least 50 countries, including the European Union, China, and India, require GMOs to be labeled. And slowly, in the US, word is getting out what GMOs really are. In BT corn and BT soy, for example, each cell of the plant contains the Bacillus thuringiensis pesticide that kills insects wherever they choose to nibble on the plants. The makers of BT seeds claim that animals and humans who eat BT corn or soy are not affected, and that the BT degrades in their stomach before perforating the linings and invading the body, as it does with insects. No human studies have yet been done to prove that claim. However, rats that are fed BT corn or BT potatoes show intestinal and liver problems, immune system deficiency, and eventually tumors. The other most widespread GMO is Roundup-ready soy and corn. That particular corn and soy is engineered to survive repeated spraying of the herbicide glyphosate, aka Roundup. Farmers can spray Roundup over the whole field on the promise that all weeds will be killed, while the GMO corn or soy survive. Roundup and related weed killers based on the molecule glyphosate are now the most widely used herbicide in the U.S. for industrial agriculture, for use by public agencies along roads and on land, as well as for private home and garden use. The herbicide and GMO industry makes the same claim for Roundup as for BT, that it is perfectly safe for animals and humans. However, research going back to the mid-70s, when Monsanto first discovered, patented, and used glyphosate, shows a long and expanding list of side effects for humans, animals, plants, soil, and water, including the Roundup-ready GMO soy and corn plants themselves that are supposedly immune to glyphosate. So even if the makers of the genetic construct of Roundup-ready corn and soy claim that the genetic modification of the plants has no ill effect on the plants and us, they are unable to make the same claim for glyphosate, which is sprayed in each and every Roundup-ready planting, because as opposed to the GMO construct, glyphosate was researched and tested for over 30 years. The results are just not known to the public. And in the talk you're about to hear, you will find out how glyphosate destroys the soil, decreases nutrients in the plant, how residues of glyphosate accumulate in the plant, especially in the parts we or the GMO-fed farm animals eat, and how glyphosate acts in animal intestines, how it decreases yield and lowers the immune system of the plant, making GMO corn and soy less able to cope with environmental stresses from heat, drought, or high winds. Dr. Don Huber is Professor Emeritus of Plant Pathology. He taught, researched, and published for 35 years at Purdue University on plant physiology, microbiology, pathology, and soil-borne disease control. Don Huber came out of retirement to speak out on the dangers of glyphosate and genetically modified plants. Monsanto already launched a campaign to discredit him, in spite of his impeccable credentials that even include his work from 1963 to 1971 at the U.S. Army Edgewood Proving Ground and Fort Detrick Biological Laboratories in Maryland. There he did research on chemical and biological warfare, which qualifies him really well for his current work. Don Huber came from the land. He grew up on a citrus and poultry farm in Arizona and later a dairy farm in Idaho. He worked his way through college at a sawmill, in construction, as dishwasher and janitor. Don Huber presented his research at the second annual Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa, California, in September 2012. He's in his late 70s now, and clearly deeply attached to his family. However, he is so concerned about the risks of glyphosate and GMO plants that instead of enjoying his retirement, he now delivers dozens of presentations each year in the U.S. and worldwide. And I urge you to stay with his talk, even if at times it becomes a bit technical.
And a quick reminder, you are listening to TUC Radio Archival Program from 2012 with Professor Don Huber.
I'd like to share with you some research over the years, but try and give you a comprehensive view of glyphosate and GMO crops and their interactions then with crops, animals, and the environment, and also people. We're told that we're going to have genetic engineering to meet the world's needs with a growing population here by 2050. We've been producing an abundance of food, nutritious quality, and economically priced for centuries. We're producing more food now with 7 billion people than we've ever produced in the history of the world. 1798, Malthus said it was impossible. If you realize that we're only harvesting about 30% of the genetic potential of our crops now, the reason we only harvest that amount is because it's the stresses, the environment, the weather, our pests and diseases and whatnot, that take that other 70%. We have 30% of our harvested food that is lost after harvest. Rots on us. The way to improve our yield and our to meet those world needs is to remove the stresses. With genetic engineering, it's just the opposite. The last 2 years, genetically engineered corn has cost us over a billion bushels of corn each year because of the increased pest problems and stresses that they impose. Part of that is through a reduced nutrient availability, because they're less efficient. All of those stresses have a tie back to nutrition. They either reduce the nutrient availability, efficiency of the plant, But we can also use those nutrients then to reduce those stresses. Now, nutrients are important not just as constituents for the plant, but they're also the regulators, inhibitors, and control elements for all of those enzyme engines that we have in a plant that do the production. Just like a large 400 horsepower engine in a tractor can do a tremendous amount of work. Doesn't do any work until you turn the key on in the ignition. If you want to stop that particular enzyme or physiologic process, you pull the key out. All of our herbicides are what we call chelators. They can grab onto an essential nutrient and essentially turn the ignition off so that it shuts down that pathway, and you have an herbicide where the plant is killed or dies as a result of shutting off that physiologic process. In order to keep that process going, you can apply nutrients and you can offset that effect. All of our herbicides, again, are chelators. All of them, except glyphosate and glufosinate, are very specific for the nutrients that they chelate. Glyphosate chelates all of the positively charged cations, a very broad spectrum. It changes all of those components in this ecology that we're managing when we're farming. It changes the plant then, it changes the physical environment by immobilizing those nutrients, the biological environment in two ways. One is that it does it by reducing availability of the nutrients. The other one is that glyphosate is a very strong antibiotic as it chelates all of those nutrients. It has a broad spectrum ability to kill microorganisms. It's the broadest spectrum of any antibiotic that we know. Still somewhat selective in that Clostridium, Salmonella, number of our pathogens are not sensitive to glyphosate, but all of those natural biological controls that we have in the environment for crop production or in our intestines are very sensitive. So it changes that ecology that we're farming. Anytime we do anything, make a single change in agriculture, we change the interaction of those four components. In the last 30 plus years, the biggest change we've had in agriculture is the almost monochemical use of glyphosate as an herbicide and the introduction of glyphosate-resistant genetically engineered crops. Again, glyphosate's a very powerful chelator, as you can see from the stability constants. Able to immobilize them, tie them up so that the plant can't use them, animals can't use them, and we can't use those minerals. Chelates in the spray tank. If you add some zinc to the spray tank as a micronutrient for the plant, you lose your herbicidal activity. Chelates in the plant to reduce its physiologic function, to make it susceptible to the soil-borne pathogen. You can't kill a plant with glyphosate in sterile soil. It's the pathogens that we always have to contend with that do the killing. It chelates in the soil. That's why it's detoxified when it gets in the soil, either through root exudate or from drift and spray that goes there. It's not necessarily degraded. There are two factors that determine the life expectancy of glyphosate in the soil, and that's pH and its clay content. The lower the pH, the longer residual activity. Higher the clay content, the longer residual activity. In sandy soil, perch water table, its half-life of it may be 60 to 90 days. In a good clay soil, pH 6.5, ideal for crop production, its half-life may be over 20 years. extremely long-term residual effect that we're seeing then in agriculture. Been accumulating in some soils for over 30 years. Detoxified, not necessarily degraded. The other thing that we find is when we add our other fertilizers to a subsequent crop, it can be desorbed or activated again. You've seen this research from Bott. The more phosphorus fertilizer that he applied, the more glyphosate is released to damage a later crop 8 or 10 years after it was initially applied. It chelates all of those positively charged ions that are essential for crop growth, all of those nutrients that we rely on to grow the crop and that we rely on for our own nutrition. It also reduces the uptake of phosphorus by 60%. Glyphosate's an organic phosphate herbicide, so that it chelates, but it also competes with phosphate, which is the form of phosphorus that plants and animals and humans can utilize. So it can be desorbed. Very powerful effect on the plant. It will reduce the uptake of iron by 50% and manganese by 80% at a half an ounce per acre. We normally recommend 1 pound per acre, or with the isopropylamine salts, that would be about 1 quart, 32 ounces. 1/2 ounce will reduce the uptake of iron by 50% and manganese by 80%. It inhibits the translocation of manganese, zinc, and iron from the roots to the shoots by 80%+. So it's has a very powerful effect, again, on the nutrition of that plant. We need to recognize that if it's been used as either a broad-spectrum herbicide or been applied to Roundup Ready cotton, canola, alfalfa, corn, or soybeans, or the other crops. Again, the mode of action of glyphosate as an herbicide is to make the plant extremely susceptible to disease. It's a well-documented mode of action since 1984, rarely cited. People will cite the inhibition of the EPSPS enzyme. But you can see in sterile soil, just stunts it. It's a growth regulator. Makes the plant less efficient for nutrients, so it's not going to grow as well. But it can't kill it unless those soil-borne pathogens are present, like Fusarium and Phytophthora and Pythium and Rhizoctonia, Coronospora, or any of the other 40-some genus and species of plant pathogens that we have to contend with all the time. Extremely low rates. It predisposes those plants, even the Roundup Ready plants, to more severe disease. It takes 4 times the fungicide to control the foliar diseases on Roundup Ready sugar beets than it does on a non-Roundup Ready, because we've compromised that resistance in the plant. As an herbicide, it's a systemic. Very simple to use. You can squirt it on the plant, moves throughout the plant. You don't have to have that good coverage that most herbicides require. Moves into the throughout the plant. It accumulates in the root tips, the shoot tips, legume nodules, and in the developing reproductive structures that we're going to eat. About 80% stays in the plant for the life of the plant. 20% moves out into the soil, where it has that very strong biocidal activity to kill the normal biological control organisms against these soil-borne pathogens. Stimulates the pathogens so that we're creating super weeds, super pathogens, and a compromised environment that would normally provide a great deal of biological control of those pathogens. It's also toxic to many other beneficial organisms. the nitrogen fixing organisms, rhizobium, ready rhizobium, the mycorrhizae, earthworms, number of other organisms, anything with a shikimate pathway, glyphosate will be toxic to at extremely low rates. Again, we're not talking pounds, we're talking ounces. Some research of Dr. Robert Kremer. Again, you can see a 500% increase in root colonization of Roundup Ready soybeans when you apply the glyphosate by the fusarium. This is the cause of sudden death syndrome in soybeans. So that we have an epidemic now, the last 10 years, of this very serious disease on soybeans that we didn't have prior to that extensive use of glyphosate, which we see on the Roundup Ready varieties. You see a marked reduction in those biocontrol organisms, the pseudomonads, the bacillus, those organisms that make many of the mineral nutrients that are normally not available in the soil are also very sensitive to glyphosate and suppressed, so that we have less manganese and iron and other nutrients available for that developing crop, that in the genetically engineered crop also has a smaller root system to extract those nutrients or water. The consequence of all of this and the excessive use of glyphosate for the last 30 plus years is that we have over 40 plant diseases that we used to consider relatively well controlled through a management program that are now what we call emerging or re-emerging diseases that we don't have controls for. We also see new diseases like the Coronospora root rot on soybeans. You can see that it can be a root nibbler. It's a common soil-borne organism throughout the Midwest. You look at the right, what happens when you put a little bit of glyphosate on the foliage of a Roundup Ready soybean plant, and this disease becomes a very serious disease. I've seen 40% yield losses in the Midwest from a disease that 30 years ago didn't exist. We see Goss's wilt as a major epidemic throughout the Midwest. Cost us a billion bushel last year alone. With the drought and Goss's wilt this year and the increased susceptibility to drought, yes, we see greater than a billion bushel of corn loss. Prices going from $3.50 to $5 a bushel to $8+ now because of that effect. Take all on wheat. Again, a disease that's very severely influenced by manganese availability to keep the resistance of the plant is totally compromised. We have growers who just quit growing wheat when they started using glyphosate as a broad-spectrum herbicide 2 and 3 years before the wheat because of the increase in this disease. We see scab and other diseases and the mycotoxins also stimulated by glyphosate that is applied 2 and 3 years even before the wheat or barley crop. Dr. Miriam Fernandez has shown that glyphosate application is the single most critical in agronomic practice for fusarium head scab and the toxins that those fusaria produce. We have genetic engineering. It's given us the opportunity to apply glyphosate directly to the plant without killing the plant. There's nothing in the genetic engineering technology, though, that does anything to the glyphosate that we're applying to the plant. It's still a very strong chelator for micronutrients. What the genetic engineering does is insert an EPSPS gene from Agrobacterium tumefaciens that doesn't require manganese as a cofactor. It has another cofactor. So that when you apply glyphosate and it chelates manganese and iron, magnesium, and other nutrients, it doesn't totally shut down that bacterial enzyme so the plant can survive the glyphosate application. Glyphosate that's applied, again, is systemic. It's still chelating those essential micronutrients that we need for proper crop growth or proper nutrition of our animals and ourselves. Down at the bottom, I've just shown some of the epigenetic effects when you challenge and destroy the integrity of the normal genetics in the plant through genetic engineering. There are hundreds of other changes that take place besides just permitting you to apply glyphosate to the plant. One of those epigenetic changes or non-target change effects is a significant reduction in the ability of those Roundup Ready plants to absorb specific nutrients. These are some different university studies. You can see the effect on manganese, on corn and soybean. You see a similar effect with zinc, and you see other nutrients that are greatly reduced. We can look at those in the Roundup Ready plant. It's just as susceptible to some of these effects as the non-Roundup Ready. So 15 years ago, when we thought we were using too much manganese in the ration of some of our animals, we suggested that they cut back a little bit. At the same time, we started feeding them Roundup Ready soybeans and corn. As you can see, 45% reduction in manganese in Roundup Ready soybean seeds and meal. You have a reduction just in the growing plant. Manganese required for the water splitting reaction of photosynthesis, also for 28 other enzymes. Magnesium is required as a component of that chlorophyll molecule to capture the sun's energy. We've tied one hand behind the back of those plants that want to work for us just as hard as they can to meet our production needs. When it comes to the nutritional value of these crops and their ability to withstand stresses and to keep producing.
That was part one of a one-hour talk by Professor Don Huber on the impact of GMOs and the herbicide Roundup on crops, animals, people, and the environment. He's Professor Emeritus of Plant Pathology at Purdue University. I recorded him at the second annual Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa, California, in September 2012. Don Huber is one of the rare, courageous voices from mainstream science who dares speak out on the topic of genetic engineering. Professor Don Huber has been back in the news in 2019 because his research on GMO plants and the effects of Monsanto's Roundup is being acknowledged worldwide. Come back for part two of this archival program when TUC Radio returns. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can also subscribe to weekly podcasts. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.